pod paste and
D like creates.
Here's a proven formula for success. Work plus rest equals training. But most endurance athletes get it totally twisted and think training equals work plus work. So what is affecting you from getting your optimal rest, recovery, and sleep that you need to perform better? Find that answer out and more in this episode of D-Late Creates. What is up? I'm Darren, your host of D-Late Creates, running for Masters of Some.
The internet's most exciting endurance sports podcast.
Through self-improvement, we help serious endurance athletes master some of their health, some of their fitness, and even some of their life, because it's all the same. And in being your host, you can trust me because I'm a lifelong endurance athlete that's ran a sub-3-hour marathon, completed an Ironman triathlon in 10 hours, and currently trying to break 16 minutes in the 5K. So I'd say I know some things about some of the stuff that we talk about. Quick warning, we use some adult language and cuss a bit. Be mindful who is around when you listen. Want to know the best free and most natural and organic way of getting faster, stronger, more energy, thinking more clear, and being sharp in your fitness, health, and general life?
Will it make me more handsome?
Probably. Actually, it will. It's actually the title of the podcast, which is, I think we're going to title it Recovery.
I don't know. I reckon we get through the episode and then we think of the title at the end. It'll all emerge from the episode.
Okay. But this is, getting proper sleep and resting well and recovering right. That's the way to all those things, basically living a better life. And this episode is all about finding your recovery blind spots. That's what it could possibly be called.
That's a pretty good clickbaity headline.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really appropriate title, and I think that's that's some unique value we can bring to this topic, because what we're not going to do is we're not going to rehash and rebleat all of this. We'll mention some studies and we'll mention some data points and all the rest of it, but there's plenty of podcasts with informed people, plenty of articles that break down the consequences of not recovering, not getting enough sleep, and the benefits of doing the opposite. And we're not sleep experts either. Just, I don't know. I consider myself a sleep expert. I've done my 10,000 hours. I think I've slept for, what I'm saying? Like,
That's really good. That's really good. You're turning it on for the microphone and the cameras.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I like that.
So with this, we're talking about sleep, rest, and recovery because we think it's essential for a healthy and balanced life. It's that whole meta thing. We know a lot of people have talked about this before, but we're going to try to put our own little slant on this and talk more of the recovery benefits with your training and, again, with your life. This will start out with three anecdotal personal stories of where I came from and what I've learned over the past 37 years of living and figuring out my own sleep patterns that hopefully could work for someone listening or stumbling upon this podcast. And maybe that person can then go, oh, well, I kind of relate to that, and I could take something from that. So we'd love to hear your own stories, failures, and successes, and let us know if something we said worked or didn't work. After that, after each story, Phil will then explain some of my stories via data, studies, and his own personal experience. And then at the end, we'll approach it with the dark side, which is that good old red team. And we'll throw some Himalayan rock salt at it, which we've now called Himalayan rock salt. It used to be called Red Team. This is going to be an interesting one because I think we'll be attacking the Red Team, which might be a new interesting angle.
Yeah, and where I'm coming at this from a coach perspective is it's translating that conscious incompetence to conscious competence to unconscious competence. So many people know the value of sleep. They know they should be sleeping more. That that there's a sense there that they're not sleeping enough, or they're not recovering well enough, and they're suffering the consequences of that. Yet they're not doing anything about it, or they struggle to make the change. And really, that's what I want to dive into, and that's where the suggested title came from. How to find those recovery blind spots. Where are you not looking? What are you not seeing that's hampering your sleep, rest, and recovery? So that's the kind of angle I want to approach things from.
Cool. I like that. And to add to what I was just saying before you just said that, I think the game of fitness and health and life is actually more about who can recover well enough after stressing themselves
completely
to then come back, you know, at 100, 101% and then do it again and then do it again.
Yep.
And it's actually a game of recovery rather than being, you know, 50% because you demolish yourself from, you know, either working too late or smashing yourself from training or racing too much and then not being able to recover and not being able to do the workout to its fullest potential or to its extent, the workout, like, you know, performing and actually executing the intervals you need to. If you need to do 10 intervals at 3 minutes,
100%.
If you only get to 6 because your legs are tired from the workout from 3 days ago, then you're not going to get anything out of that workout.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So recovery is key.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
So I love telling stories and here we go. I used to be a night owl. I think I have the genes for it because I read a book that we'll talk about a bit, which is Why We Sleep. Is it Matthew Walker?
The better one about the night owl and early bird. Actually, I don't know. I might be talking out of school because I've not got to that bit in Matthew Walker's book yet. But Why We Sleep. The Power of When is a book on chronotypes.
Oh.
So it breaks down the concept of, you know, the typical night owl, early bird, but mm-hmm. it adds another couple of categories. But we'll talk about that in a sec.
All right, cool. Well, that's good because I definitely have the night owl genes from just based on my parents, and I know how my mom operates. She works nights.
Yep.
She did up until a few years ago when she retired, and she carried me, and she was still working nights. And I think they kept me up ridiculously late as an infant to see her when she would come in. And so I remember, like, very early on, I just would naturally get this second wind.
Yep.
At pretty much like 7-8 o'clock. And I finally figured out that rhythm, that circadian rhythm of sorts. And it is because, you know, I'm a quote unquote night owl. But I've kind of changed that and I'll get to that in a second. So back it up to my early 20s. It was awesome. I used to just stay up till 2, 3, 4 a.m. and, you know, work on music, create stuff. Cause you know, my name is
D-Late Creates,
you know, and I create stuff. And I then go to class at 8 a.m. I train on the track, go hard, repeat, hit the weekend, sometimes Thursday, go out drinking, get that drunk sleep. You know that, I got 9 hours of drunk sleep. Yeah, that's real good sleep.
I got about 6 hours of drunk sleep last night.
That's like 3 hours of real sleep. You know, stay up till 2 a.m. bullshitting online. And then, repeat that again, you know, for about 2-3 years going into my early 20s.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. There is your sleep strategy. We are master of some. Thank you. Good night.
Just end it there. There you go.
Yep.
Yeah, it worked in my early 20s because, you know, I've got a lot of stamina and I got a lot of life stamina and obviously endurance fitness stamina.
To a certain extent, in your early 20s, you can just not sleep, eat car parts for your diet.
Drink oil.
And
like literally car oil.
And smoke just
paper.
Just paper and plastic, and you'll be fine.
Yeah, you'd be absolutely fine.
Yeah.
So I got faster in track when I was doing all this crazy sleeping, not sleeping thing from my genetic ability. But I never actually got past the plateau. And that plateau was 2 minutes and 1 second in the 800. So I never hit that plateau. I couldn't get past that plateau. 2 minutes and 1 second, I just could not break that. And I then started thinking back, you know, a few years later, and I'm like, it's probably because I wasn't sleeping right. And, you know, my potential, because I was running a 49 second 400, you know, you run through any calculators and all that. Like, I should have been running, I think my coach was like, you should be running a 152, 800.
Okay.
And that will never, like, I'll never let that die. I'll never let that go away. That 152 is what I should be running based on my ability. And I couldn't, you know, I had this potential, but I couldn't fulfill that potential. And I'm going to probably chalk it up to just lack of sleep, rest, and recovery.
Okay.
So, I mean, what do you want to say anything about that? Do you got any stats to help that?
Going back to the book we mentioned earlier, the Power of When, each of the chronotypes, and he breaks it down into four different categories. So it's got and he gives them animal names as well. So you've got a lion, which is the early riser, like at their best at kind of 5, 6 a.m., but ready for bed at like 8, 9 p.m. I'm definitely in that category. Then you've got the wolf, who is the sort of typical night owl kind of thing. So the person whose creativity and output peaks, you know, post midnight. You've then got the bear, which is pretty standard circadian rhythm. Most of the population fall into this category, so not early risers, not particularly going to bed late, just basic sleeping. And then you've got dolphins, who are all kinds of messed up, polyphasic, broken sleep, weird sleeping patterns, and that's a small percentage of the population. So I'm mentioning this because what's posited in the book is that for each of these chronotypes, there's particular times of day that are best to do certain activities. So there'll be a different time of day for each chronotype that they're best to work out, they're best to take a test, the best time to have sex for them as well, best time to take naps. So there's all of this stuff that is deeply affected by our circadian rhythm. And the author, did you get the author's name?
Michael Breus.
That's it.
Breus. So yep. I might have pronounced that wrong.
Yeah. So he posits that this is genetically mediated, that we come with a chronotype, and that affects how we do things. So what it could have been as well, depending on the time of day you were attempting your timed runs on the track, and your lifestyle factors relating to that. It could have just been a mismatch. Like if you'd have run those, say, later in the day, or you'd have been going to meets at a completely different time, or you'd have been conducting your training later in the day as well, you might have gotten greater benefit from it there. So that's what strikes me. With that as well. Plenty of stats to suggest, though, that lack of sleep does affect physical and mental performance. Absolutely. If you want to dive into this, the Why We Sleep, Matthew Walker's book. We were talking about this before we came on air. Lots of pushback apparently on that book.
We'll get into that. We're going to red team at the end of this.
Great. Yeah, okay. Yeah. We'll just
old school red
just
team.
Foreshadowing that conversation. But and I just want to sort of get ahead of this with this again, we're not sleep experts. We've not conducted sleep studies. We're just throwing out some anecdotes and our experience and kind of digging into how you might identify again your own sleep blind spots. Take all of these studies with a grain of salt, but the overarching meta lesson here that taking sleep seriously, having good sleep hygiene, and getting an appropriate amount of rest is pretty undeniable that has a profound effect on performance, health, and well-being. So just wanted to sort of get that out of the way there. I realize I'm rambling on, but I'm going to ramble on to one more point. No, if you're in a situation, dear listener, like Darren, then maybe experiment with that time of day training as well. So, even if you change nothing about your actual sleep, maybe switch up when you're doing your workouts, when you're scheduling in your hard workouts or your time trials, and see if that has an effect on your performance, because it could just be the time of day that you're trying to do stuff.
So fast forward to my mid to late 20s. I got deeper into running and endurance sports. Now I got into cycling, and I think I even tried to do a duathlon before I turned 30. And I was like, okay, I like this long distance stuff.
I was going to say, by long distance, you're running more than 800 meters.
Yes.
Now, right. Okay. Cool.
Yes. Finally. Yeah. And, I stepped up to a half marathon. I was doing, longer runs. Like, I mean, my longest run before, I started doing all this was like 25, 30 minutes. So, yeah, so I think I got into proper, 60-minute long runs. So I started seeing a trend, and I was getting sick a few times a year. And I was also kind of feeling burned out, and I was like, what's going on here? And I was like, oh, when you train hard, you train a lot, you put a lot of volume in or intensity, I then would pick up some bug, my immune system would drop. I wasn't, sleeping as well and still trying to jack up the endurance training.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically, poured water from one glass to another. And, I was like, I traded in 800 running for longer distance running, which probably was worse because, the longer medium intensity stuff does more damage than the short, sharp stuff. I really was starting to see an interesting trend with me loving waking up early, but me having trouble going to sleep early enough to get enough sleep. And I really liked waking up, especially when I was living in New York City. I love going off bike rides, at, I think early for me was like 6 a.m. I did a couple 5 a.m.s, and I think, yeah, 7 a.m. was early for me back then.
Yep.
And I was riding with this one group, and I remember I had to like actually be out at like 5:45 to meet them in Central Park. And I was like, the city's so quiet, you know, because it's a late city. It doesn't start till about 9 a.m. Really, things don't get going. 10
yeah, right.
And I remember just having this internal struggle of going, but I'm DJing late and, you know, I'm working on music late. I'm out networking, doing my quote unquote job, my career.
Yeah.
But I want to wake up early and go for these runs, you know, when the sun's rising.
Sure.
And all this stuff. So I don't know. I mean, that it's not really a story. It's more of just a transition into me starting to take sleep more seriously and really go like, where's the optimal sleep? This goes back to your original point that you said, it's one of those, the conscious unconscious thing. Like, it's like, I know I should be doing that. Oh, I should eat well, but I'm not going to eat well because I need to do the actual research on how to eat well. I need to figure out how to prepare the meals and what meals I like. Like,
sure.
There's so much to it. It's like, it's simple in theory and very hard in practice, you know, like very complex in practice.
Absolutely.
So getting good sleep, it required me to be very organized early.
Yes.
You know, like multiple hours before I went to sleep, I need to be organized, you know. I need to be organized the morning before or you know, that afternoon. So sleep became really serious in my early 30s. And I wasn't able to recover as quickly. Just general, like getting 5-6 hours of sleep, like you said, in my early 20s, I was perfectly fine with that.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, I'm tired. You know, 5-6 hours of sleep 3 days in a row, I was like, shit.
Yeah.
You know, 30-31, I was like, I think I need to get 7-8 hours of sleep tonight because I'm tired. So
well, it kind of points to that allostatic load thing. So, you know, we've got good stress. We've talked about this before. You know, exercise is a hormetic stressor up to a point. You know, we apply stress to the system, and the system adapts and comes back stronger. The problem comes in where we don't consider the total stress load, the total, you know, of all the things that we're putting in our particular bucket. So you take late nights, you take the DJing, you take the networking, you take the mental energy and physical energy you're putting to all of that, you layer on an increased training load, and you're filling your bucket up. And if you think of that kind of stress as putting stuff in a bucket, and you think of sleep as almost bailing it out afterwards, overly simplistic, I know, but just for the visual metaphor, I think this works. You know, you start filling it up more and more with a different type of endurance training, and then you're giving yourself less bailing time because you're getting up in the morning, and it's no wonder that you'd start suffering things like, you know, getting sick more frequently and decreased performance and feeling a bit shitty. You know, a couple of the studies from, I think these are from Why We Sleep, but, you know, 500,000 people, 8 different countries, men, women, young, old, all the rest of it. Sleep deprivation seemed to, across the board, increase the risk of getting cardiovascular disease by around 45%. A similar study in Japan that tracked a bunch of males over, I think, a 14-year period. And then when they compared that to a control group, they found those who slept 6 hours or less per night were 500% more likely to suffer a cardiac arrest. I mean, that's pretty wild. And we're talking, you know, heart health there specifically. But, you know, numerous other examples will point to just, you know, less serious forms of sickness. You know, you're more likely to get a cold. You're more likely to do damage to yourself in training as well, you know, for a couple of reasons. I mean, you hydration status could be affected, and you could be just have less like synovial fluid around the joints. You more likely, if you're playing a technical sport as well, to make technical errors, which could lead to, you know, twisted and broken and, you know, tripping and falling and clattering into stuff. Like, I think that's a under-considered path to injury from sleep deprivation. You know, plenty of studies on driving, you know, showed that in terms of being flagged as a drunk driver, sleep deprivation was as detrimental as alcohol consumption to a certain extent as well.
Yeah, I'm seeing sorry to jump in. It was the 6 hours. Where's that at? So Oh no, it was a group of people. They got drunk, and then there was you know, they had people that drank a few drinks, and then there was people that didn't get sleep 48 hours, and
yeah,
those people that, or even less than 48 hours, I think it was 36 or something,
yeah,
4 hours, and they were performing the test at the same exact level. I'm sorry, this is the James Clear article.
Oh, that, okay,
yeah, which we'll link. But yeah, they performed the same cognitive level as someone that had like 3 or 4 drinks or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Once again, if you need, I say this a bit. Most of the time, more information about something being good or bad for us is not what we need to make the change happen in our lives. You know, people who are looking to stop smoking don't need further convincing that cigarettes are bad for them. People who are looking to cut out sugar from their diet or reduce sugar in their diet don't generally need more information about. I had a conversation with a mate the other day. He's like, "Phil, have you got any books about how bad sugar is?" I'm like, "Do you not know how bad sugar is?" And he's like, "I do, but I think I need more convincing." I'm like, "Okay, let me give you something else." And steered him to a book on habit formation, Gretchen Rubin's book, actually, Better Than Before. I think it's a really, really good read, actually, cool, for anyone who's looking to build better habits.
So we're at present day now in my story, and
you look tired.
I've been not sleeping for the last 15 years, 20 years. No, I actually cracked the code about 2-3 years ago. And my partner, she goes to sleep early. I think she's a, what is she? She's an elephant? No, she's a lion.
Oh my God. I'm going to text Nadia after this.
Be no, like,
you will not
don't
believe.
She is not an elephant or
Darren
a lion.
Darren called you an elephant in the podcast.
She goes to sleep very early, and she likes waking up early naturally.
Yep.
And that was a bit like, oh wow, she was going to sleep 2-3 hours before me when we first, you know, moved in.
Yep.
And I've slowly started kind of like sucking into her, because once she woke up, I would be up. She'd be stirring in an apartment, and I'd be like, damn it. So I was like, you know, I need to get my, what I've worked out, I need to get 7 hours of sleep. And I know that because I got some proper sleep analytics studies done. I got the whole thing connected to my brain and all my senses and all that, and they did a whole thing. I went to a sleep center. I did that for snoring, which was interesting, but I got all my sleep data, which was cool. And I found out that my sleep cycle, the whole 90 minutes is actually about 85 minutes. So most people, there's a 90 and you need about five.
Yep.
Five of those cycles.
Yep.
It's the REM, deep, kind of coming back up and then back down.
Mm-hmm.
And at 85, that actually works out to be about 7 hours. So it makes sense that I am fully fresh at 7 hours.
Yeah.
Because I have a shorter cycle than most people. And Nadia's might be 92 minutes or 94 minutes, you know, and just that's the extra hour that she needs, hour and a half.
Sure.
But what's interesting is I found out how much sleep I need. And I was like, cool, you know, I can operate on 6:45, 6:30 is a bit, you know, pushing it. 7's nice, 7:15. Once I would get to 7:30, 7:45, and I was getting this routine, I actually felt really tired. Like I was overslept, or I was oversleeping, and I felt really sluggish.
Yeah.
It took a long time to wake up. I was waking up with an alarm. Oh, sorry, without an alarm. Mm-hmm. It was really interesting. I was in this nice flow, you know, recovering well, just feeling sharp.
Yep.
And then we had a baby 5 months ago.
Uh-huh.
And that kind of all went out the window. Baby's been actually great, like as far as sleep goes. And I'm now modulating a bit, adapting my training around how I sleep. So, you know, he sleeps pretty well towards the morning. So if I haven't gotten the right amount of sleep, I then just sleep in a bit. I get to sleep much earlier so that at least my time in bed, quote unquote, is longer, even though I'm up sorting him out for 5-10 minutes, 3 or 4 times a night.
Yep.
And it's been quite interesting. So it's ironic that now I finally figure out how to sleep. You know, I figure out my patterns and my rhythms and what works for me and my nighttime routines and my morning routines and all that. And now I have this thing that I have no control over. And, you know, it's a human being, so he's a high priority.
Yeah.
He's pretty chill. So, yeah, it's just a great way to end my story is... I can't control my sleep, but I actually figured it out now.
Yeah, and that's super important. And what your story across the years has sort of pointed to is that I think we all need to be mindful of constantly adjusting our strategy. Like we can't have this thing and it will work in perpetuity for the rest of our lives. Same thing with nutrition, same thing with training, same thing with everything, right? Like it's what is appropriate for you now with what else is going on in your life. So yeah, just that's a watch out for anyone who's listening. Just when you think you've got it dialed in, something's going to change in your life, and you might need to tweak a little bit. So and coming back to that conscious competence piece and that flat finding your blind spots, there's a model I really like. I've mentioned it before, but it's sort of Ken Wilber's four quadrant model. We'll include a link to this in the show notes. I'm not going to explain it in exhaustive detail now, but it essentially looks at the internal and the external factors. It gives you a lens through which to look at yourself in the context of what's going on inside for you. So your thoughts, your feelings, your beliefs, what's going on outside physically with your physical meat wagon, your body, what's going on in the culture. So what's going on in your groups, in your in groups, in the wider culture. Like the country we live in and the maybe an organization you're a part of, and what's going on in the systems as well. So some examples of this, and we all I mention this model, and I like it for this purpose, because we all tend to have blind spots there. So some people are really not good at understanding their own thoughts and feelings. You know, they're kind of that silent to them. They're like, what are you feeling right now? And it's like, I don't know, I'm not really sure. They've not tapped into that intelligence. Some people are really poor at understanding what's happening in their physical body. You know, what the sensations mean, like, you know, controlling and modulating that. Some people are really blind to the effect that culture has on them. So moving through each one of these quadrants, you'll see where you're struggling to come up with answers. You'll see where you're struggling to identify or really dig into something. And that's usually where the work is. That's where, and I work with coaching clients on this model fairly extensively, that's where the leading edge of development is for people. So if you're in the camp where you are aware that you might need more sleep, you're aware that maybe I'm not getting enough, and I could really change up my sleep hygiene and my sleep strategy, this could be a good thing for you to explore. Again, the internal subjective experience of the world. So looking at your thoughts, your feelings, your beliefs, your attitudes towards sleep. Do you have a lot of mental chatter going to bed? Do you find it hard to turn off? Do you constantly put yourself in an emotional state? You know, you think yourself into a mind-body emotional state. Is that where the work is? You know, is it in the realm of the subjective thoughts and feelings that are preventing you from getting sleep? Is it in the realm of the physical? So is your physical environment not conducive to sleep? It's too warm, it's too noisy, it's too light in the room. Maybe you're eating too late. Maybe you're, there's a physical thing you're doing, or there's a physical thing in your environment which is causing you to not get sleep. So it could be nutrition. It could be you're taking certain supplements. You're taking alcohol, drugs, whatever it might be. And then there's the cultural factors as well. And this is the last one I'll kind of mention for today. But, you know, are you existing in, an organization where it's work hard, play hard, and there's a culture of going out, and there's a culture of drinking, and there's a culture of working late? Do you live in a country where that doesn't agree with your chronotype? So, you know, are you in one of those like wacky countries that where they all eat dinner at 10 p.m. like
psychopaths?
Sorry. If you're eating dinner,
you're talking about Spain and like Portugal and all
psychopaths.
Psychopaths.
No,
New York is like that too.
Yeah, no, all love. I'm just joking. I can't imagine it though. Like I'm like, I'll have my dinner at 5:30. Thank you very much.
I didn't even talk about that, man. I was eating dinner at like 11 midnight. Going to sleep like 20 minutes later.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was bad.
So, but that's culturally mediated, right? Like, you know, people who exist in those cultures, they might be a lion from their chronotype. They might be the early morning, you know, that's where their cortisol spikes and they've got all the energy and they can, and you know, just because their society that they're a part of says, you know, no, we have dinner at 11 p.m. and that's how we roll. And is that affecting you? Do you need to move to the UK? But you get what I'm saying. So exploring and just unpacking and digging into those different areas for yourself. So My offer is you could pull up the quadrant model, pull up Ken Wilber's quadrants. It should have some prompts in each one of the boxes, and just think through that. It's like, okay, how is that impacting on my sleep? How could that be causing me to not get the sleep I want? And is that where the exploration is? Is that where the work is for you?
So we're gonna red team this, or as we retitle it, was it last season? Pink rock salt, Himalayan pink rock salt.
When did we do? I don't remember.
You don't
that.
Remember that? You need to re-listen to the whole season binge mode like I did and critique the shit out of yourself. But yeah, it's called Salt Bay. It's just Salt Bay, pink Himalayan rock salt. We're going to, it's like take it with a grain of salt. Get it?
Can we go back to red team?
Yeah. Or red team.
Red team's way better.
So the antithesis of sorts to why we sleep. It was actually quite harshly debunked. There was a lot of facts that were not facts, a lot of studies that were taken incorrectly from that book. And this came out, I think, about, I'll give you the time. I won't say how long ago was it, but it was mid-November of 2019 this came out. And I forgot the guy. It's we'll put up show notes. It's Guzzi. Guzzi.com, Guzzi.com. And it seems like he like debunks a lot of these books, like, and he goes and gets the facts. But one of the biggest things is no shorter sleep does not imply shorter lifespan. And that was the thing about if you get little sleep, yes, it did show that those people live less. But if you get too much sleep, it showed that those people live less. The sweet spot was around 7 hours. But that's just like nutrition studies where there's actually more to it. It's causation rather than correlation. Is that correct?
It's correlation rather than causation.
Correlation rather than causation. So the studies don't take into account the lifestyle factors of those types of people, and those end up being more like the people that sleep a lot are usually sedentary and don't take care of themselves and all 100%. Those other things. And people that eat red meat and get cancer usually eat the processed, simple, refined carbohydrates. And,
with the red meat.
With the red meat.
And the study is not done on people eating grass-fed bison and organic vegetables and drinking kombucha with their dinner and then getting a good night's sleep. Like, those aren't the folk in the study.
Exactly.
For the most part.
Yeah, yeah. And Mark Manson actually kind of gave me the heads up in his newsletter. It's called Motherfucking Monday. It's so good. So Mark Manson privied me to that actual kind of debunking of the book. And what's interesting was because Mark Manson actually recommended the book a few months before and said, hey, everyone needs to read Why You Sleep. I was a terrible sleeper. I thought I could run off 5-6 hours of sleep and caffeine and I was fine. I read the book, scared the shit out of me. And then he went back and said, okay, a lot of this shit was actually, not a lot, but there's a couple points that he said that actually weren't true, or he skewed the studies.
Sure.
And he's like, fair enough. And he said, you know what? And he actually kind of defended. He's like, this nonfiction shit is kind of hard, especially when you're not writing about things that there's a lot of studies about. So you end up having to pretty much kind of come up with theories out of your ass or connect studies together. And this guy, though, he is a doctor and he's a sleep doctor. So I'm not going to, Matthew Walker? Yeah, I'm not going to shit on him because I think it actually is a very well-written book. And there's a couple of things that I found from the book that while this is red team, there's still like value in what he wrote. And I went to the internet for that to actually help me out. So Mark Manson said, does the critique negate everything in the book? No, there's actually still a ton of great info in it. And here's the funny thing. I'm sleeping better and feeling better than any other time in my life. And much of that is due to reading this book that is full of quote unquote bad research. So the question is a bullshit book that helps you still bullshit? I don't know. All I know is get probably a bit more sleep, make it a priority, and also don't obsess about it because obsession is bad. So that's one thing. Another guy that I found on Hacker News, T-O-M-T-E, gonna give him full credit. Hacker News looks like Reddit. He said, I'm gonna just paraphrase, that's interesting. When reading the book, my takeaways weren't really about cancer risk. They were actually what REM is and NERME, light and deep NERME sleep is for. Some fascinating studies about lucid dreaming, effects of looks like caffeine and sleep medication, or coffee and sleep medication, sleep hygiene tips, and he said a whole bunch of other stuff. So, like, I actually really like it because I'm learning about sleep. So yeah. The book is actually titled Why We Sleep. And while there was a lot of, you know, health scary shit in it, like, you need to sleep more or you'll die in the beginning, in that first, you know, 15, 20 pages to really get you sucked in, I do feel like I was like, oh, there's actually a rhythm to sleep. And oh, this, I learned all about the circadian rhythm, like, and how that works, and how it's 24 hours and 15 minutes is your circadian rhythm, and you have to get that reset by the sun.
Yeah.
Like, fuck. And there's actually flowers and stuff, and other animals, they all have circadian rhythms, like,
yeah.
And the sun resets them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just fucking cool. I'm interested and curious about that stuff. So yeah, I don't know. That's what I'm going to take out of it.
Sure. Absolutely.
I red team my own red team.
I like how you did that. I like it when you red team the red team.
The red team.
But yeah, I mean, look, again, once again, I think I've said it twice on this episode already, but I'm not a sleep specialist or a doctor, and I'm in no position to debunk or validate anything in that book, or debunk or validate the debunking and the validation of the book by these other people.
We're doing that thing that starts with an M and ends with an A and rhymes with beta.
Oh, meta.
We're doing that.
Oh,
meta,
yeah.
Shit.
No, it's all good. But what I'm
saying. I like it though. I'm just
what I'm
out,
saying
like
is the overall body of evidence, I think, is there for you know, more and better, for the right amount of good quality sleep, and I don't think that's in particularly hot dispute. If it is true that Matthew Walker did kind of misrepresent or embellish some stuff in the book, there is a real potential for damage there, and I get why you try and do it to some extent, like, but you've got to look at, say, like, so like the Reefer Madness films of, you know, I don't remember when they were made, but all the scare tactics that were put around, say, like around pot in the US, when it becomes evidently not true from people's experience that the propaganda that's being put out there about something is absolutely false, it gives people a way to dismiss and throw out the whole thing. So, you know, it's like, okay, so you're telling me I'll smoke one joint and become, you know, a murderous psychopath. And then, you know, lo and behold, you have a bit of a party and that does not happen. You just get a bit hungry and sleepy. You're like, oh, well, all of this is, you know, all the propaganda's bullshit then. And there are, you know, potential real consequences to still, like, especially for developing adults. Like, if you're smoking loads and loads of pot, it's probably not a good idea. But people can look at Reefer Madness and go, well, the government just lies about this and we're not doing it. So I think on that vein, there's potential damage in overrepresenting the dangers of stuff as opposed to, like, just drilling down to what's known and what there are good studies about. But overall, I think most people, I think the net effect of this book has been to raise awareness around sleep. I mean, I first heard about it, I listened to Matthew Walker talk on Joe Rogan's podcast. You know, a guy like that getting on a platform like Joe Rogan's is reaching a phenomenal amount of people, and I guarantee a lot of people who would have listened to that would have changed some sleep habits and be sleeping better and performing better. So overall, I think Matt Walker providing a service, I think it's good.
Yeah, he had good intentions. Yeah, I agree. Just to kind of end all of that, some interesting takeaways to know if you have gotten enough sleep or you're getting enough sleep. So this is something I don't do too much, but I'm basing it on qualifying the data rather than quantifying it. I love quantifying my data. And this is kind of cool. So none of these are set in stone. Again, I'm not an expert. Phil's not an expert in sleep training, even though you have gotten your 10,000 hours.
I have. And I've given talks on sleep to athletes as well. So in the context of, like, training endurance athletes, you know, I know the and sleep hygiene as well. Yeah. Like, maybe we could do that another time. I don't think we're going to get into that.
We could pepper it into another episode. So just a couple of things that I've actually, you know, I've read these things and then I thought about it and applied them, and it's pretty spot on for me, at least. I don't know about you or you, Phil, or you, Mr. or Mrs. or Mix listener, MX listener.
It's MX.
That's the non-binary.
Okay.
Yeah. If you don't need caffeine before 11 a.m., you're doing well. So if you need caffeine before, you know, 10, 11 a.m., if you need it to just function and get to 11 a.m., then that means you're probably not getting enough sleep. These are just, like, general ideas.
Are these from you or...?
No, this is from what I read.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry.
I missed that. Waking up with no... I wrote it in the... How the notes are, I wrote it in my my POV,
okay,
my point of view. I wake up, when I wake up with no alarm clock, it's more of a habit and routine. And after about 10 to 14 days of the same bedtime and wake up time, I start doing that. That's another sign that you're sleeping well. I personally, this is a personal one, this is not a study, I don't life bonk. I call it life bonking around 3 p.m. That whenever I get like 5.5, 6 hours of sleep, I decide to go training hard that day or something. 3 p.m. hits and I'm like, oh my God. And I know that I probably should have gotten a bit more sleep.
Yeah.
So that's my kind of barometer. And if I'm not bonking, then I know I'm sleeping well, you know, and I'm recovering well. And kind of also, if I'm rested and recovered, this is a me thing because I know I'm a night owl. It takes me forever to wake up. Whereas, like, I think my partner, she just bounces up when she wakes up.
Yeah.
And she's like, yay! And I'm, no matter if I got 7 hours of sleep, 9 hours of sleep, perfect amount of sleep, I'm always like, I'm dead. And it takes me like 10, 15, 20 minutes sometimes to wake up. And at first I thought it was because I wasn't getting enough sleep. And then I do this thing in the morning where I do this series of kind of yoga-like. It's like these slow push-ups and holds and whatnot and these really slow stretching things.
Yeah.
And I do, you know, my morning routine, which is journaling and reading and meditating.
Yep.
And then I go to the bathroom, brush my teeth. And basically within that 10 to 20 minute span, I feel myself waking up. And by that 20 minutes, I'm like, yeah, let me crush this workout.
Yeah.
Like I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
And if by that 20 minutes, if not 25, 30 minutes, I don't feel good, I know I haven't gotten enough sleep. So that's a personal thing.
Yeah.
Because I don't wake up like chipper. Like, and it just takes me forever. Like I'm like, you know, a bear coming out of a cave.
I think that's the chronotype thing again, because it sounds like I'm more similar to Nadia. Like Kat makes fun of me for it as well. Like I'll wake up and I'll just be like, bing, like
nah,
ready to go. Whereas Kat sounds more like you. She's like, get out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ad break.
Is the health and fitness internet too much sometimes? Too many conflicting articles and videos that confuse you on how to train and eat right? Or you don't have time to just read and watch everything about, I don't know, the new trends on carb cycling for trail running? Don't worry, we'll take care of all that for you. Sign up for our free email newsletter, 3 Thing Thursday. We'll put 3 perfectly curated and created things in your inbox for better living and training. Go to dlatecreates.com/TTT. We do the hard time-consuming work and scour the health and fitness internet's deepest and darkest corners. This is so that every Thursday, you have a piping hot new email with the latest and coolest tips, tricks, tools, tactics, and skills, all so that you can train and live consistently to do dope shit in your next endurance event. If you sign up now, you can receive my quick guide on how to get healthy, stay fit, and use data to create habits that last a lifetime. That's dlatecreates.com/TTT to be inspired and motivated on the regular. Time is a resource no one can make more of, so we appreciate you taking precious time out of your day to listen this far. Our goal is to show the world how to live better through running, cycling, and triathlon. The episode and many others have a transcription. Go to the show notes description to find out more. This was produced in Sydney, Australia, and I'd like to acknowledge the Gadigal of the Eora Nation, who are the traditional custodians of this land. I pay my respects to the elders, past, present, and future. I recognize their continuing connection to the land, waters, and culture. These lands were stolen and sovereignty was never ceded. If you like this episode, again, we'd highly appreciate it if you go on whatever app you listen to and make sure to follow DLate Creates Podcast. We're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon, Acast, and a bunch of others. And if you're feeling real loose, a rating, review, or share of this episode to anyone you know that would be into something like this would be amazing. The more people that hear about us, the doper stuff we can do to then help other people. And if that virtuous cycle continues forever, we would always be grateful to you. If you have any questions, concerns, suggestions for the episode, or hell, you want to be on the show, hit us up. The best way is to email talk@dlatecreates.com. We're also on the socials, mainly Instagram @dlatecreates, or you can hit us up wherever you can find us. Last, this episode and music were created and produced by Podpaste and myself. So if you like any of the music, you can add it to your device playlist by going to dlatecreates.com/music. Don't worry if you didn't get all that. There's a link in the show notes description. Thank you again so much for listening. Peace.